Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Also on WGN Radio's Facebook page and on mine, I'm King John. We've got our crazy Trump moment brackets, our watermelon video, and some other pretty fun things I think you'll enjoy. But speaking of Facebook, for just a minute to start the show, I just wanted to do a shout-out to Kathy O'Malley. You know, Kathy and Judy were the girlfriends who for many, many, many years did such extraordinary things here at WGN Radio. Really, one of this city's great radio teams, each of them among our best broadcasters. They're in the Walk of Fame for a reason. And Kathy posted a poem on the Girlfriends Facebook page. If you like the Kathy and Judy Facebook fan page, and those of you who are Kathy and Judy fans, and if you're not, you should do this, you will be. She wrote a poem, and I'm not going to read it here, certainly not in its entirety, because I want you to go to her page, like her there, and stay part of that community. But Kathy said something to Robert Feeder, which I think is so true, the media writer in town. She said, women of a certain age, I'm thinking of women over the age of 60, simply are being dismissed. She was talking about in the media. But they love each other, and we support each other, and I think it's cool that women, that it spoke to women that we've loved for our whole career. And that is this poem that she wrote. She went out to lunch with some of her girlfriends, and when she got back, she said, oh, I have a verse in my head, and she just jotted it down. And if you haven't heard it, I'll just tease you with this. She wrote in part, Elaine's vertigo has never been worse. Kay can't recall where she left her purse. Rhonda's about to replace her knees. Linda's breathing is tinged with a wheeze. Later she wrote, they've been through divorces and babies and wakes. They do for each other whatever it takes. They've already buried Marcia and Kate. And truthfully, Lizzie's not looking so great. It's very funny. It's very touching. It's very true. If you're a woman of a certain age, as Kathy puts it, or frankly, if you're just anybody, particularly Kathy and Judy fans, make sure you are following them and liking them on their Facebook fan page. And this is the stunning thing about it. I mean, Feeder in part touched on it because in 5 days, Kathy's little poem generated more than 166,000 likes, 25,000 comments. Those are Trumpian numbers, which will cause Kathy, if she's listening right now in her car, to drive off the road. And it's been shared, which is maybe the real metric of the power of something like this, more than 90,000 times.
Whoa!
You know, I'm kind of proud of my little Trump brackets video and our watermelon video for Watermelon Day we did this week. Ours are a decimal point of those numbers, and we work really hard at it. Isn't that stunning? So kudos to you, Kathy. You continue to touch a nerve and connect with people, and I wanted you to make sure that you knew about that if somehow you missed that. By the way, Sam Panayotovich reached out to me this week, too. In fact, he called me and said, oh, my God, have you seen this video? So I watched it at DNA Info. And it was almost a week ago. I think the baseball game was played in Canaryville on Monday. And after the game, a brawl broke out with the adults that were there. Some 50 people, it is estimated, were throwing haymakers.
Yeah. Somebody brought a bat. Actually brought a bat. And you can see it on the video. It got out of hand real quick.
Do you know what led to it?
They didn't say yet.
They didn't say in the story.
They didn't say.
Presumably, you know, here's my take on it. I mean, you might think, well, it was the two teams, it was a heated game, and afterwards the parents were still jarring at each other about the other. I mean, you see that at Little League games all the time. But it also sounds like, based on the audio and the video that the woman took, a woman was shooting it. We don't see her, but she shot video for about a half hour. In the first few minutes, you see this brawl at a Little League game in Chicago. But she was saying, well, those people came up from 18th Street. And I think the game was played around 40th Street and maybe Halstead, something like that.
Yeah.
So maybe it was some, I don't want to say gang, but maybe there was a group of people who had some issues with people in this. It wasn't about the Little League. It was about neighborhoods and maybe people descending on somebody else's neighborhood and creating a ruckus that didn't have as much to do with the baseball game. But I don't know if that's the case.
So there's an ongoing investigation, and the alderman down there, Patrick Thompson, said that it was a continuation, like you said, of an argument between parties that began earlier on Friday. So this went through the weekend and then bubbled over on Monday. League officials have said that all parties involved in the fight have been banned from Canaryville Little League, and they're now installing cameras around the surface. 50 adults fighting at a Little League game.
And, you know, it's funny because when you watch the video, there's dads in shorts and T-shirts and moms. You, imagine what a Little League audience looks like. That's what this crowd looks like. So it's pretty weird to see Mrs. Johnson or Mr. Smith just going, hey, opportunistically just throwing a punch and then backing away. I mean, I know you're ticked. I don't know what you are thinking or doing. But some of these people were fully engaged in the fight, and then some of them on the periphery will be going, I think I could get a kick in. Boom! They lob a kick in and then step away. Did you see that video the way I did, Sam?
I didn't know what to think, honestly. And I watched about 20 of the 30 minutes.
No.
At one point, did you see the guy walking with his pants down?
No, I did not see that part.
Oh, well, I just ruined it for you then. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't ruin it for me. You kept me from watching that part is what you just did. If I see a guy whose pants are about to come down, I'll go, his pants are going to come down. I won't watch this part. Why did his pants come down? Did somebody pull him off in the melee?
I didn't ask him. I should have had the answer to that. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I'm not holding you to it. You weren't there.
No arrests were made, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
I don't think anybody was injured either.
And they were unable to determine who the aggressor was. But
well, the guy with the bat would be one. I mean, he may not have started it, but I don't think you can bring a bat to a Little League fight.
But you were saying, Sam, that these people have been banned from Little League events. So who's banned? Do they even know who they're banning?
Yeah, right.
Well, they gave a statement. The league gave a statement, said that all parties involved have been banned from the facility.
You know who you are.
And future league participation.
Yeah. Every now and then you'll see stories of people who are walking by somebody else's house and they'll see a UPS package there. And they'll go, hey, I wonder what that is. And they just take it. The same way some people maybe will steal an iPhone from your car if the door is left unlocked. And I believe that a lot of these people, and it's really weird to me because I think a lot of these people are not career criminals. They are just criminals of opportunity. They go, well, I just grabbed it. And they have jobs and they have families, but walking among us is a subset of the population of people who will do stuff like that. If your phone got taken off your front seat or if... a package got taken off your front step. It may not be a career criminal. It may not be a gang of teenagers canvassing your neighborhood. It could be just somebody hanging around and they go, I think I'll just grab this. And they might not do another crime again that year or ever, but they just do it. I think there's those people walking among us. That's kind of unfortunate, isn't it? I think the same way about these Little League parents. Most of us would never dream that we would throw a punch at a Little League game. And yet, suddenly, the opportunity presents itself, and I'll bet some of those people go out home that night and go, holy cow, I was in a Little League fight. What kind of monster am I? My number's 312-981-7200, by the way. Little League season is about over now. What did you see? How did it go? I'll tell you this, too. My boys are at a Little League ball now, but we went through it. And I saw my one son play baseball from about the age of 6 to about the age of 21. And in those 15 years, I would say that the worst for angst, anxiety, and parent behavior was the 10, 11, 12 neighborhood, 9 to 12. Maybe if I had to pick an age, I'd say 11 or 12. Those kids' parents are the ones that just completely lose it the most.
Well, that's when it's the most competitive because you have the Little League World Series, which is kids 10, 11, and 12, and that's coming up on...
Yeah.
The time when kids start getting, you know, looked at by high schools.
It's tournament time now. A lot of these kids are playing in tournaments.
Yep.
So the parents who cannot step back, and I know because I was there. It's your world. You live it. You can't be in a different place. This is who you are and where you are. So it's really important to you, and it's really bugging you that other team's coach is a brother. Or that the umpire did this. And you just, it's impossible for you to see it from 30,000 feet. I get it. But someday you're going to look back and go, holy cow, we were out of our minds back then. These people are out of their minds, I think. But I'll tell you what, it's been so long since I've been there. I haven't been part of this conversation, and I was of a mind that maybe it had passed. The same way it's left me, maybe it's left Little League fields, that parents don't lose their heads anymore, that teams don't fight, the coaches aren't jerks, the kids aren't spoiled or overwhelmed. Maybe it's still that way. Anyway, I'm just kind of curious, how to go this year? What did you see? 312-981-7200. If you're at that fight, I'd love to hear what happened, but I'll bet you weren't. I'm just wondering if you have anything that relates even remotely to what we're talking about. The video's at DNAinfo.com. Is that where you find it, Sam, if
yes.
you want to take a look at this?
Yep, right on the front page. Well, it was on the front page yesterday, but you can find it DNAinfo.com/Chicago. And the title is Major Brawl Outside Canaryville Little League Brings Out Police.
Yeah, brings out the worst in us. Let's talk to Gina. This is John. Hey, Gina, you're on WGN.
Hi, I'm just commenting. My husband and I have noticed over the years how parents seem to have so much invested in their kids and sports. We have four. Our youngest will be a senior, so we're kind of through all that younger thing. But I feel like parents want their kids to be seen. They think they're all their kids are going to get these big scholarships for GM Division I Cold. And that's what I think drives so many parents. Either that or they're just trying to live vicariously through their kids if they didn't play in sports and they want their kids to really excel. But it's kind of pathetic, really, because the vast majority of kids will never play D1. Two of our kids played Division III, which is where a lot of kids end up, without ever being on travel teams or, you know, any big, really, really known, what people think are known teams, you know, like,
Illinois and Michigan and stuff like that, yeah.
The whole travel thing is out of control. It's just, and it used to be something to be on a travel team. Anymore, there's anybody who wants to play travel can play travel. I don't know. It's annoying when you see the parents that are so involved and not just involved, but at every single practice and every single, it's just too much. Let the kids play.
And you know what it does, too, to the local little leagues? Again, I'm a little out of school here. It's been a while since my kids have been at that level. But I think when the very best half of the kids go to travel teams, then the local little leagues really aren't that good. The kids do want to play some measure of competitive baseball, but if you only have the lower half of kids quality-wise, then it's just not that good for anybody.
But I'm just telling you, the travel teams are not like the top quality of top players like they used to be. If you want to, you can find a travel team to play on. Like I said, our kids never did, but there get to be more and more and more of them. Anybody can play travel.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Thanks for the phone call.
It's a frustrating situation. Parents need to just step back and let their kids just go have fun.
That's Gina in Orland Park, her lips to your ears. Larry, you're on WGN. Hey, Larry, what do you want to say?
Well, I'll give you an umpire's perspective.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Most teams are really, really good, and their coaches and their parents from all levels. I usually do anywhere between 11-year-olds and 18-year-olds, but typically I usually do older levels. But when I do the lower levels, typically most of the parents and the coaches are really, really good. Unfortunately, there's a group wigged out, and I concur that it's the 9, 10s, 11s, and 12s.
Yeah.
And they need, unfortunately, parents and coaches need to understand that umpires are out there trying to do their best. Granted, you are going to get some bad ones, but you're not going to change the call, and you're just going to make things worse. And another thing that I've noticed doing this for a long, long time is that the players themselves, and not all, but just a minority of them, have become really disrespectful to the game, really disrespectful. And it's really appalling from my perspective, because I've been through it as a coach like you were.
What do you mean disrespectful? How do they disrespect the game?
Disrespectful, like questioning balls and strikes, questioning outs, just body language,
yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's really deplorable.
Yeah.
And parents are really embarrassing themselves and their children. So that's my perspective as an umpire.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I think that's, again, I know you know. I know we all know, but I don't think it hurts to hear. Hey, Larry, I understand our boys played ball together once upon a time. Is that right?
We did at Butler.
Oh, no kidding. Hey, Larry, it's good to hear your voice. I appreciate you joining us on the show today.
All right, good to hear you. Thanks for taking my call. You have a safe day.
Yeah, that's our sons played a little ball together once upon a time. Haven't connected with him in forever. When I met you in the summer. All right, it's 10:38 on WGN. This is John Williams. Appreciate you tuning in. And I don't want to talk sports too much. There's plenty of that in the world, and I'm not that good at it anyway. But there's one other sports wrinkle that's on my mind today. And you guys may have seen the story about the CTE study that came out over a week ago now. 200-plus brains examined from pro football players, college football players, even high school football players. And almost to the one, they all had evidence of CTE, that chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It's the sort of thing that you get when you have way too many hits to the brain. It's the sort of thing that famously football players are coming down with these days. So when some of these guys die, their families turn their brains over to science, they examine it, and every single time, virtually every single time, these guys have that CTE. And I just wonder if that's making people rethink as football season starts up again. I mean, I got to tell you, I do not recall, and the Bears will probably be terrible again this year, and I don't know how good Illinois is going to be or Northwestern, the teams that I follow around here, but I find myself really looking forward to the football season. I don't know, maybe, I don't know why. The Cubs will be fine, and I haven't had a bad summer, but for some reason I'm looking forward to football this year. Maybe my summer hasn't actually been great, and I am looking forward to just getting it over with and having a nice autumn. But now I'm starting to think just a little bit differently about my love for the game, too. I mean, I don't know where your head is on this, Sam, but when you see guys take a hit, bam, you think, okay, that was an awesome play. Oh, well, he just blew that guy up, and they're going to show that on replays. Is anybody now starting to think, yeah, that guy might not live to see 60?
I watch it, and I'm amazed by how big, how fast, how strong. I mean, the athletes are only getting much more into it. They're only getting bigger and stronger and faster with the way they train now and the supplements and all that. I look at some of these old NFL guys that can't walk around. I mean,
and that's just their knees.
Can't walk around.
Oh, sure. You watch Mike Ditka walk across a golf green, and that was 20 years ago. Watch Dan Hampton try and play golf. They can do it, but just literally getting from hole to hole is arduous for them. And that's just the things you can see, you know, their knees and their knuckles, but their brains you can't.
Pretty soon, the NFL is going to try and really put in a motion to remove the kickoff, because the kickoff is the most dangerous play in football. One team here, one team there. Okay, run full speed at each other and crack somebody. Oh. They're trying to do away with the kickoff just because, like you said, there's way too much head trauma, especially on that play. If you're a special teamer on a kickoff, you're just going to crack somebody or you're going to get cracked.
I was thinking about that Gronkowski guy. The Patriots, right?
Yep. Gronk. Big Gronk.
Just like he's a small village with a helmet.
It's about 6'7", 280.
And joyful and athletic, and he's going to run at you as fast as he... It would be like if a rhinoceros was drafted by the NFL. That's Gronkowski, right? And here he comes, and, like, you have to get out of the way, or you're going to get run over. Well, the guys can't get out of the way. They're just as, you know, jacked up as he is, so they run at him, and they all hit their helmets. And they'll spin in the air and do cartwheels to try and avoid each other. And it's fantastic, the athleticism you see. It's just a beautiful sport at times. But you think, wow, that cannot be good. I don't want to take away anybody's love of the game, but I'm wondering if you have been talking to your kids who play football, or if you're just having this little nagging conversation with yourself anymore, because, you know, there's so much money to be made.
$13 billion last year.
Was that the NFL?
That was the revenue. $13
billion. $13 billion industries that people are lining up for do not go away as a courtesy. You know, the NFL ain't going anywhere.
It looks like they may pay $1 billion settlement for concussions. Okay.
No. Wow.
A billion If you're making 13.
No, you can afford that.
Yep.
No, tobacco companies had to pay that huge settlement, and it seems to me like people still smoke. I just wondering if anybody is having a conversation with themselves or their families about their either fanship of or their participation in football. I want to play something for you. I talked a couple of days ago to a neurosurgeon at Northwestern. Alan Shepard is a neurologist. He's a doctor. He has a few interesting things to say about it. This conversation goes about 5 minutes, but this is his take.
Well, I'm a general neurologist at Northwestern, so I see, you know, a variety of people with neurological issues. Seeing concussions is a portion of my practice. I was also a team neurologist for my son's high school football team. So I, you know, have some experience with brain trauma and brain injury.
The incidents, and I know it was a select group of brains that were donated for study, but the incidence was alarmingly high of CTE in players who played professionally, played in college, even played in high school. What were your observations about that?
You know, one or two of my colleagues pointed out, well, it was a very skewed study because the people that donated the brains and the tissue had an idea that there was going to be an abnormality. And yes, that's true. I mean, if we take the lungs of people that smoke, we could be pretty sure that they're going to show some signs of smoking. But I think that it kind of makes everybody just kind of stop and say, look, it's not a coincidence. It can start at a very young age. And it's something that probably making certain types of hits, penalties, or getting really extravagant big helmets, you know, may not be the answer, because at the end of the day, the brain may not be able to withstand this kind of trauma over 5, 10, 15 years.
So what do we do about that?
I know. I have a hard time watching football compared to, you know, what I used to be.
Does your son still play?
Thankfully, no. But he did go into rugby, which I wasn't that thrilled with either. But he stopped rugby. But the interesting thing with rugby, we don't have the same numbers of rugby people, but they don't wear a helmet. And there's some thought, they have like a leather, you know, strap. But there's some thought that if we didn't wear these big helmets that are made of these incredible materials, maybe they wouldn't be as strong of hits. And I'm not saying we're going to be able to switch that, but even though we're making these big helmets, people are running faster and putting their heads down. I just don't see that's going to protect people. I think at some point we're just going to have to say, look, you know, is this worth it? And I don't know who's going to have to say that, the owners of the team, the people that are going into the league saying, mm-hmm. well, you know, I know what the risks are. You know, like boxers are the same thing. I know what the risks are, but I need to do this. And so there's always going to be people that will want to do it, I think, but I just don't see how they can make it safer.
Is this CTE like Parkinson's?
The CTE is more like Alzheimer's disease. Some of the changes in the brain, an abnormal protein, it's called a tau, T-A-W protein, accumulates in part of the brain, and we think that's the same abnormality that occurs in people with Alzheimer's.
But some of these guys describe being in pain, being in some sort of mental anguish. I don't get that from Alzheimer's patients.
That's exactly right. That's one of the differences. The location of these abnormalities in CT is different than those people that have Alzheimer's. So it's similar in the pathology, but it's different in the location. So mm-hmm. that's right. People with Alzheimer's don't complain of severe headaches. They don't kill themselves as much. They don't have these violent outbursts. There's something different about the condition, but it's most similar, as far as we know, to Alzheimer's.
And is that a symptom? Is it pain in the brain? Is it skull pain that these victims feel?
Another really good question, too. I mean, a lot of them have complained of this headache, and it's just a severe headache. They're taking narcotics. People with chronic pain can get depression.
You know, I wonder, too, if we knew that there was a certain pressure threshold that if we stayed under, you could sustain 150% hits. It's the 80% hits that are actually harming you. Do we have any research like that?
I don't know of that research, but I do think, where I read somewhere, it is a little bit of positional. So we can agree punters probably don't get this. field goal kickers don't get it. I don't know about centers and tackles and the front line. They're not getting hit by people running, you know, 10, 20 yards away head on into them.
Right.
So I think that's something that needs to be studied. What about what positions are more at risk?
Well, that's what I was wondering about, because even though linemen have impact on every single play, it's lower velocity than the specialty players, the halfbacks, the defensive backs, the wide receivers, those guys. They get hit less, but when they get hit, it can. Those are the ones you see on TV.
That's right. I don't know enough about that research, but that's something that we need to look at, yes.
So what do you tell parents of kids that want to play football, junior football, you know, peewee or high school?
Well, I mean, I told my son not to play football. He ended up playing football, and that was his favorite part of high school. So telling your own child something is different than telling someone else. I don't particularly think that peewee is a big deal as far as the velocity of the hits and the frequency. But I think once you start getting into high school, I think a parent needs to know that there is this condition out there.
I wonder if parents should be equally concerned if their daughters are playing soccer or their sons are playing hockey.
The highest amount of concussions, I believe, in high school and college sports is women's soccer. So I just don't think the velocity of the hit is enough to make chronic traumatic encephalopathy a problem in soccer.
One last thing. You know, my friend Teddy Roosevelt said that they ought to wear football helmets, and that actually dropped the death rate, and it was staggering 100 years ago in football. I wonder what's changed since then.
Well, you said he said that they should wear leather helmets?
Yeah, they didn't. They used to, when they first played football, they didn't have helmets at all, and guys were dying. Then they started to put on helmets, and guys, the death rate went down. It seems like I suspect that it's the size and speed of the game has changed now. If everybody was smaller, going slower, I'm sure the helmets we have now would do a better job of protecting people's brains.
I think that's exactly right. And so, yeah, we're making some changes to the game as far as penalties and late hits and things like that, but I think the changes might make the game not as interesting. That would be really effective, and that's true.
Yeah, that's the hard part. We love the game. We love the way it's played now. Nobody wants a slow motion game. Nobody wants smaller players. Nobody wants fewer hits. You know, Sam, I'm listening to the doctor. That was our conversation we had the other day. I can't imagine how you fix this thing.
Not going anywhere, that's for sure. I mean, like I said, they're going to try and maybe ban the kickoffs
and punts.
But it's not even just football. I mean, there's contact in hockey. There's contact like this in other sports. So I don't know. It's extremely tough to navigate the waters on this. And like you said, these players are only getting bigger, faster, and stronger, and they're only going to hit each other more and more.
I suppose that's the only way it would happen is if the players said, wow, you know what, I'm going to play baseball. You know, some of the athletes have to make that decision. I can understand why you want to play football, but maybe the athletes themselves will start to weed themselves out. But I don't
know. But they do it for the fame. It's all about the fame and being on Monday Night Football and playing in a Super Bowl.
And it's a fun game to play. Football is really fun. I mean, for a lot of guys. And lordy, the money is good. It's either a scholarship to Northwestern. What's that worth? $250,000? Or it's, you know, if you make the pros, it's millions of dollars. So, you know, who am I to tell somebody not to do that? But so there's the perpetual motion machine you've got now. Guys that get scholarships, guys that play for pro football, all the glory, it's fun. And they're willing to shorten their lives for all of that. And we love it. And I don't see how we extricate ourselves from that. Terry, this is John. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Well, I watched a preseason game that was just on Thursday night.
Yeah.
And I cringed. I tuned it out. I turned it off. And I'm a member of the NFL alumni. I'm a former practice team player with the Packers and a member of the media. But I cringed every time I heard helmet to helmet, crisp, clear cracks.
Yeah.
They were targeting with their helmets. The officials were not calling anything. And they were letting these guys do themselves in. It turned me off.
That's funny. How are you doing? So you obviously played at a very high level. What position did you play, and do you worry about that for you?
I was a flanker and a wideout, and your friend there who said the kickoff is the most dangerous play, that is not correct. most dangerous play is the receiver crossing the middle.
Yeah, that too.
You're turning back towards the quarterback. You can't see anything, and the defensive players can target you without you even knowing they're coming.
You okay? How do you feel these days?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I didn't, in fact, because I was a practice team player and Bart Starr liked me, he told everybody, don't let him get hit in the head, you know? He was a coward.
Wow. So who did you play for then? Was that Vince Lombardi then?
No. It was, thank you, Bart Starr.
Yeah, but I mean, who was your coach?
Bart Starr.
Oh, Bart Starr was the coach. I thought he was the quarterback. I see. Interesting. Wow. Well, Terry, thanks for the heads up on that. Yeah, I wonder if other people are doing the same thing. I appreciate your listening. Have a good day. By the way, did you see this in the Inc. column in the Tribune the other day? New Yorker Ken Franklin is betting no. The lifelong Mets fan has cobbled together an uplifting song called Chicago Cubs Family Fly the W that he hopes will capture Northsiders' imaginations. He's enlisted the support of Cubs fan and Buckingham's guitarist and singer Carl. Oh, boy, Carl, I should know how to say your last name. Gia Maurice. Older readers may remember his 1967 hit, Kind of a Drag. Chicago area singer-songwriter Liz Chidester and legendary session man and Cleveland Indians fan Joe Vitale. So these guys got together and produced yet another Cubs song. I don't have time for all of it, but part of it goes like this. The song is called Chicago Cubs Family Fly the W. You can pay for it online at iTunes and Amazon. I felt so bad for the people who went to see Lord, got 20 minutes in, and then that thing's axed.
Yeah, I should have added this in the traffic report, too. Of course, Grant Park is going to be a mess. Lollapalooza just kicked off officially 8 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the singer from Oasis? He went out there for about 15 minutes and then walked off the stage.
Yeah, I heard Roe was, who was it? Was it Roe? No, it was Dean was talking about that, I think, with Steve. Somebody was talking
Liam
about
Liam Gallagher is his name.
Yeah. Did three songs, then kind of pulled his earbud out or whatever his earpiece was
just
and walked off.
Walk off the stage.
Which is, Cochran was talking about this. That's his shtick. That's his thing. He's been a malcontent all along. I don't know what he was upset about, but he just walked away.
He claimed there were voice problems.
Yeah.
I don't buy that.
The voice problem is, I know his voice was not singing songs people waited for anymore. That's the problem. I don't know what that's like. That must be an issue. I know you've got to have the right feedback and the right levels. We go through this with radio, but if I had 20,000 people sitting out there waiting for me or 2,000, whatever it was, I think I'd find a way to get through it.
I always wonder how that works with people's contracts as well. I mean, you got contracted to do a job, to come perform. What happens then? You
just wondering about that, too. Does he have to forfeit his pay? Is there a minimum number of songs? How does that work? Lord gets paid, I'm sure, and she really wanted to perform. She had some expletives that she did not delete because they said, well, you're not going to go on, the show's over. But imagine if you are the, and boy, that's a tough call. There's a trailer over in Grand Park, and it has Lollapalooza officials, and it has the emergency management people for Chicago in there. And they see the storm coming. They see those occasional bolts of lightning. They have a decision to make. Lord's on stage. She does not tour much. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. And they said, you got to get out. You got to get out. Quick, everybody, leave the concert and walk along the sidewalks. I mean, you know, in a way, you say, okay, everybody, you got to get out of here. There really isn't immediate safe shelter for all of those people sometimes, but I think that's, they didn't have any choice. It's 11.
Yeah, it's good to err on the side of safety.
Well, yeah, because one crack of lightning hits somebody or some people get knocked over, That is so on you, man. You have to err on the conservative side.
Really quickly, now get out the way. There's this story. I don't know if you heard it, John. Three children struck by lightning during a family fishing trip on Friday in Utah.
Did not hear.
I saw that story, and I immediately thought about Lala and said, you know what? No concert is worth it, man. You never know what can happen.
So it's 11:11 now. This is the portion of the Saturday show where we broadcast part of the podcast we call the Mincing Rascals. The Mincing Rascals today are our own Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist, the Chicago Tribune editorial cartoonist is Scott Stantis. He's in the mix this week as well. The gang talked about what's going on in Washington, D.C. these days. They talked about Steve Bartman and should he or should he not get a World Series ring. They started talking about the soda tax. Eric Zorn introduced himself as the temperate, I believe is the word he used. Eric Zorn, we'll pick it up from there.
That's so weird because I supported it before. I still probably do, but I think it's written badly.
They do need revenue, so I'm in. You are?
I'm in, but it was just badly written.
How about you?
Only partially. I think it's too high. Chicago has a bottled water tax. I don't buy bottled water, so I don't know what it is, but I think it's 5 or 10 cents.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me, something along that line. What you've got now is a tax that is just obscenely high percentage-wise.
64 cents on a
dollar.
On a liter bottle.
It seems too high. It seems so disproportionate. I don't mind the idea of sin taxes in general, and I guess you call a sweetened beverage a sin. But I think this is an excess.
Well, you wrote extensively and eloquently, brilliantly, about how terrible this was, but now you're okay with it.
No, I didn't say it was okay. I thought that it was poorly executed. I thought there's things like you pay.
Didn't you just say it was okay?
You pay for ice. No, I mean, no, I'm okay with the idea.
It's a temperate approach. Go ahead.
Yeah, look how temperate. Look it. I am vindicating my own adjective here. I'm saying that I think that the basic idea of taxing these beverages as a sin tax is a good one. I think it's too high.
Would you have voted for it or not?
I probably would have voted against it because I would have wanted it to be a different.
How about you, Scott Stantis?
Oh, I'm finally the voice of reason here. I'm against this damn thing. I think it was stupid from the beginning.
Intemperate, Scott Stantis.
They tried to pitch it, first of all, as some kind of sin tax or health tax. Horse crap. Of course it wasn't. It was nothing more than a revenue grab clumsily done by a heavily taxed Cook County already. I mean, remember when Toni Preckwinkle, the current president of the commission, came in and she was going to get rid of the Strowger tax, which to her credit, she did. And within a few years, she has now brought it back and then some. The people of Cook County are rightfully angry, and she's announced that she's running for re-election. Well, good luck with that.
The Chicago Tribune posted online yesterday a quiz. Is it taxed or not? And it is impossible to anticipate.
Right. What did you score? Did you take it?
I did. I didn't keep a score, but I was about 50-50.
It scores for you. So.
We just printed it and then did it with our listeners. And our listeners who were zeroed in on this, no pun intended, they were paying attention. They were, you know, as involved as any of us. They had no clue.
I got 16 out of 20, and I've been writing about this. Of course, in defense of those who didn't get it, you couldn't see the labels, and the labels will tell you what the ingredients are, so that you have something like, I think, like LaCroix lime or whatever, that doesn't have sweetener in it. I'm not sure exactly what it has in it.
I don't know how they make it sweet, because it's a sweet drink.
They've done this tax in various places. They did it in Philly. They've done it in Berkeley. They've done it in Mexico. I think Mexico, the entire country, has a tax like this. And it seems
economies that are booming.
It seems to work. I think people get used to it after a while. Just like people get, I mean, you know what the tax is on a pack of cigarettes?
Yeah.
We don't have any smokers around the table here, but.
Now, you know how much a pack of cigarettes is now in Cook County?
Scott used to smoke, right?
I did, and I quit a long time ago. But talking to smokers, it's $14.50 a pack now.
No. A carton, you mean?
No.
$14?
Yes.
Not for a pack?
Yes.
No, a pack of cigarettes does not cost more than $14.
I'm lying. Yeah.
I don't smoke either. I've not kept track on this. We're going to double check on that. What does a pack of cigarettes cost? $16?
I'm saying $14.50 with all the taxes.
Oh, with all the taxes, well, it's $14.50. I am shocked to hear that. How do people still smoke? Evidently, you can't tax people into good habits.
Man. No, you can. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you can actually. These sin taxes do work, especially with younger kids. You know, when you're a teenager, $14 is a ton of money for a pack of cigarettes. And I think that it has discouraged youth smoking, and that's a good thing.
So. Okay, but people are paying the tax in Cook County. for cigarettes, say. Say that the total bill is $14 and most of that's taxes.
I think it is. I think I'm going with Brother Stantis here.
Really?
I don't know why you questioned him, yeah.
Well,
never doubt.
Oh, not because I don't
just
love
because the number seems so high.
Thank you.
It seems ridiculous.
That's all it is. Holy
but
cow.
But welcome to Chicago.
How does anybody justify buying cigarettes in Cook County?
Well, I think a lot of people do drive to Indiana. They load up in the back of your car.
Okay, so and is that fair then to the people that, for convenience sake, or maybe they don't have a reliable car or whatever, people who are addicted to cigarettes, is it fair then to ask them to pay that much for their habit?
Yeah, you're doing them a favor.
That is exactly what Scott and I don't like. I'm doing you a favor by charging you $14. You're still buying the cigarettes, Steve.
But then our healthcare system then has to absorb... Our healthcare system then has to absorb the costs that are incurred by the illnesses that people get when they get sick.
Yeah, okay, fine. This is an old argument. I think when you go down that road, then remember, chocolate milkshakes at McDonald's are not part of the Cook County sweet beverage tax. A Diet Coke, a Coke, or a chocolate shake, which is the least healthy choice? What would you guess that is?
Well, the shake. Of course.
Okay, I'll just
tons
that's
of
my
sugar,
guess
tons
too.
Of fat. But it has milk in it, right? Chocolate milk.
It's prepared on site. It's the same reason that a Starbucks Frappuccino with sugar prepared by the Starbucks staff is not taxed. But if it's a prepared can that they sell, then it is taxed.
But if you get a fountain drink and they hand you a cup with Coke in it, that is taxed.
You guys are making the argument of how stupid this tax is.
It's just badly, badly written.
You need an advanced degree to understand it.
I want to go on to Steve Bartman, the fan who caught a decisive foul, because we'll never end this
conversation. Didn't catch it. We'll never end
this. The fan who missed a decisive foul ball in the 2003 National League Championship Series game between the Cubs and the Marlins was surprisingly given an official World Series ring by the Cubs organization this week. Eric, was that a good idea, and was that well executed?
Well, I think it was a nice gesture for them to make because this guy has suffered quite a bit over the years. I thought that the statement that he issued was strong and gracious and fairly classy. So, yeah, I mean, as far as that all goes, I thought it was a fine gesture. I wish my idea was they should have put him on the buses going down from Wrigley to Grant Park last year. And then just introduce him along with Anthony Rizzo, so everyone cheers, and then he waves, and then that's it. I think that would have been a better way for him to help put this behind him.
Well, my question is, does he have to pay a Cook County tax for that ring?
That's actually an interesting question.
Someone said that. You know, on the radio, we always get these calls. Anytime a government official loses his job or her job, there's a call within 5 minutes. Are they going to get a pension? People are always worried about that. And when
Scaramucci.
It came up with Scaramucci. Is he going to get a pay? He didn't even work a full pay period, and they're worried about his pension. Does he have to pay tax on that ring?
I never mind that, but what do you think about the whole gesture?
Honestly, John, I think it was great. I think it was well done. I cannot believe that we're still talking about it. I can't believe...
14 years later, you mean?
No, 5 days later.
Yeah.
The attention that it has gotten. No, I mean...
I know, it's a great human drama.
Yeah, I know it is. But I'm talking about nationally, everywhere. We're still talking about it.
I got good web traffic on it yesterday. I'm sure every segment on this station...
Your newspaper editorialized against this, by the way. My read on the Tribune was that this is a guy who's always wanted to be absent from the conversation. I've always felt bad for this guy. He is proof that you do not have to be part of the media news cycle. And everybody says, well, you finally had to blog about it, or just, you know, you don't. Actually, you can disappear. Bartman has done that. And now, 5 days later, Steve, we're still talking about him, and people are wishing that he'd come on their shows.
Yeah, okay. When I said that, it wasn't a criticism of us. Because everyone is still whose idea was this, but because everyone is still talking about it, and that's my only thing is, it's like, okay, they did it, it's great. I'm just surprised we're still litigating it.
We should label the conversations and arguments. Like number one is, would any fan have reached for the foul ball? And everyone's got an opinion on that. Number
everybody
two is did he actually deflect the ball from Moises Alou's glove?
Okay.
And that's another one. People argue about that. And then the third one is, did it make a difference in the game?
I can't believe we're still talking about
those. That's my point.
But those three arguments have been done to death. We should just say, let's have argument number two done. Because everyone's got an opinion, and nobody can be proven right or wrong. The argument that I made in my column this week was, I thought that it was a mistake for him to do his Greta Garbo act for all these years. I think he should have done a couple of interviews. It would have help put it behind him.
That's true.
I think that's what the history of these little scandalettes and episodes of shame tell us, which is there are second acts people are forgiving. Most people have forgiven this guy.
That came up, too, when Murtha was on. I asked him that. I said,
Frank Murtha, attorney.
Wouldn't it have been better, or I think it would have been better, just to rip the Band-Aid off years ago?
Yep.
Since we last gathered here.
Yes, sir.
Scaramucci got fired. We are considering a new immigration policy, points for learning English and being super competent. And Jim Acosta from CNN got into an argument with Stephen Miller, a senior policy advisor for the Trump administration. Fox News has backed away from the story that Hillary Clinton ordered a young DNC staffer murdered for leaking documents to WikiLeaks. Sean Hannity hasn't really backed away from that, though he said he's going to talk about it less now. Scott, what jumps out at you this crazy week?
Oh, just how stupid it's all gotten. I mean, really, now Hillary's coming out with a book, What Happened? Well, you know, you ran is what happened, and you lost. The whole idea of Fox and Hannity and ordered this guy, I mean, it's all so preposterous. And then the argument, we were talking about this, about at the press conference, and I think the CNN reporter, frankly, is kind of was fed up with being the whipping boy for this administration.
It's not preposterous. The Seth Rich stuff is not. Of course it's preposterous, but it's important, too, because people believe it. Millions and millions and millions of people believe it.
Believe that Hillary ordered a hit.
No. That
this guy leaked stuff to WikiLeaks.
Yeah, and that Hillary
Not Hillary got him killed, but that he was killed by the DNC or something because he was leaking. I mean, but Scott, people believe that stuff.
Oh, I don't mean to dismiss it.
We have to follow it and keep publicizing it. There was a political poll out earlier this week or late last week of the Trump supporters. I initially was incorrect when I said Republicans, but of Trump supporters, 49% believe that he won the popular vote. Half of Trump's voters think today that he won the popular
supporters.
Vote.
Supporters.
Voters, yeah.
People, I don't know that those are synonymous anymore.
I don't remember if the word was voters or supporters.
Here's my problem with this, guys. I don't believe the poll. I believe people were answering that, and that was what the pollsters heard. I do not believe that 49% of Trump voters or Trump supporters believe that Trump won the popular vote. He didn't. It's widely reported.
He says it's not widely reported.
He says that he did. He says if you don't count the millions of people who voted illegally, he won the popular vote.
It's not reported where these people are watching. Okay, they're watching Fox News where they're being told that the DNC killed a boy and they let that boy's family suffer for these unsubstantiated rumors and that goes on and they believe it.
Didn't you think it was shocking when they had the percentage of people who think that Barack Obama is not a U.S. citizen or that he's a Muslim? I think what people do to those pollsters is they're voting again. They're going, they don't like Barack Obama, he's a Muslim. They know full well he's not, but it sure makes them feel good when they do. And then we color all of them, it's discouraging because we're coloring all of us, America, as being that stupid or gullible.
Yeah,
I don't want to believe that.
Well, I think 2016 election proved to all of us that polling is less than a fine art and less every day.
Fine. 49% said that they think he won the popular vote. Let's knock it down to 33%. I mean, for God's sakes.
He's at 35% in the poll, so that makes sense.
It should be no digits.
Yeah, let me say a word about polling in 2016. The final election polls showed Hillary Clinton winning by about 4% of the popular vote. That was, that was the projection. She won by about 3% of the popular vote. So the polling wasn't way off. It just, if you shift, 70,000 votes around in three states, Clinton wins.
Yeah,
so it's not, polls don't get a whole lot more accurate than that.
And I'm just worried, John, because you also said last week that, you don't hold Trump voters responsible for Donald Trump.
Right.
And I do because he's behaving exactly the way he behaved on the campaign. And I just worry that people like you who have this false optimism about us.
It's a genuine optimism in my case.
Well, I don't think it's an accurate view of the country. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so the longer people like you continue to say, well, it can't really be that bad. People can't really believe that. They can't really think this. The worse it gets, who believe those things.
Okay, I'm a middle child, too, and I think what I'm also doing, maybe passive-aggressively, is trying to build a bridge. You and Scott stand over there on the edge.
Tempered is my
the other side. How does that help, Mr.
Tempered is my brand. Yeah. Stay away from my brand.
That's Eric Zorn, the Tempered One. That's me, John Williams, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio News, and the editorial cartoonist for said newspaper, Scott Stantis. Thank you, gang. That full podcast is at WGNRadio.com. It's on our Facebook page. It's on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. Or you can simply subscribe to it wherever you get your finer podcasts. It's free. It is called The Mincing Rascals. So we record that podcast, and then you listen back to it. And I'm just still thinking about the part of the conversation where we were talking about the soda tax, and the guys compared it to the tax on cigarettes. And Scott Standis said that we are so taxed, plus it's a not inexpensive product, that you pay about $14 for a pack in Chicago. And I don't know. I have no clue what those things cost. Is that right? If you are buying cigarettes at all in Cook County, just tell me what you're paying. My phone number is 312-981-7200. We did find online the price of one package of Marlboro cigarettes in Chicago is $12. Standis was pretty sure it was over 14. I guess it depends on the brand, of course, you're buying. But I just think that is so unfair to ask people who have the unfortunate habit that they can't break to pay for all of these things. And I know that they offer a disproportionate share of medical expenses for all of us, so they should have to pay. But I think we're asking them too much. I think it's a sin. It's easy to disparage those people, and they have no sympathy from everybody else. That's insane to me that you're addicted to something. We know it. We appreciate it because we tax it. And you have to pay $14? That's I don't know what the number should be, but that sounds high to me. I don't know. The song that we played a little while ago was that song about the Cubs, and it was from New Yorker Ken Franklin, who they described in Inc. magazine as a lifelong Mets fan, cobbled together an uplifting song. I'll feature part of it here in just a second, called Chicago Cubs Family, Fly the W. Anyway, that Ken Franklin guy just called in. Hey, Ken, it's John Williams. How are you?
Yes, and when I was on New York City radio, I was known as Kenjamin Franklin.
Kenjamin Franklin?
Kenjamin Franklin. And believe it or not, my grandfather was Jack of Manny Moe and Jack the Pep Boys.
How about that? Well,
so that's my royalty. But actually, yeah. King John, I actually am a big-time listener of WGN. Even though I'm here in New York City, I put on WGN on the Internet 24/7.
Wait a minute. So you're listening. You are in New York City where you license music, and you are listening to our radio show. You just happened to hear me feature your new song.
I am addicted to WGN radio, and I'm not just saying that. I'm a big listener of it, and because of my involvement in the music business, a whole bunch of acts that are on Patty's show and Justin's show, we have videotaped in New York City and Chicago over the last few years.
So you got – who wrote the song? The story in the paper is that you've got Carl – boy, I wasn't doing the names well. Is it Gia Maurice?
It's technically it's called Gia Maurice, one of the founding members of Chicago's own The Buckinghams. You know the song Kind of a Drag.
Sure. Liz Chidester, Joe Vitale. So
Joe is like amazing, as you should know from our press release. We're just doing a Google search. Joe.
Springs are coming out of his ears right now. Bing boing. Ken, you're cutting out now. You've got that digital phone, and it's going bing, bong. Well, we appreciate you listening anyway, Ken. Thank you for the call. And, okay, can we play part of that song here? This is what the song sounds like. Go Cubs, go. But they sing, take me out to the ball game. Go Cubs, go Cubs, go. Chicago Cubs family, Fly the W is the song. Hey, Ken, thanks for listening. I'm sorry we're having phone problems with your studio there. It sounds like you're calling from your studio, but props to you, man, and thanks for listening to us in New York and just happened to catch us featuring part of his song there. By the way, this is the part of the show where we normally do the Vibe Score segment. Producer Griffin walks us through a bunch of songs like that and other things, and we all argue about them and score them on a scale of 1 to 100. Griffin is taking this Saturday off as well. He can't be here to correct me or guide us in the vibe score, so we'll do that segment next week. There's an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal this week, and the Wall Street Journal was writing about how millennials, among others, but particularly millennials, this is new to them, are finding free TV. A lot of people are upset that their average cable bill in America is about $107. Sam Domitia, did I ask you guys this? Do you guys have the satellite? Do you have the dish or cable? And what are you paying for TV each month? Do you know? I'm not sure. So for me, it's more than that. Because, you know, I've got my phone and I've got my internet service. And then you just say, well, if I'm going to do that, then I get this and then I get that. And the next thing you know, you're on your way to $200. They say that a lot of people now are buying digital antennas. Free TV still exists. I haven't thought about free TV in forever. But you can get free TV, Channel 9, WBBM TV, WMAQ TV, Channel 5, still broadcast over the airwaves. And you can pull it in with an antenna. It's no longer analog. Now it's digital, so you need a new digital antenna. But that only costs you $25, and then you can watch all of the local stations for free. You don't even have to have the basic cable package. So my questions are, how good is the reception? And somebody said to us that you can get like 20, 30, I swear to God, someone called, I don't believe this. He gets in Northwest Indiana, I think it is 60 stations. That can't be possible. But I'm wondering how many stations you get, and do you miss CNN? And MSNBC and Fox and ESPN1 and ESPN2 and ESPN12. And actually, you can watch HBO with HBO Go. Just subscribe to that independently. So some of the premium channels you can get as it is. But I'm just wondering how you are doing that. And what's that been like? Let's talk to Kevin. Hey, Kevin, this is John. You're on WGN. What's up?
Good morning. Yes, I've been doing this. We moved from Arlington Heights to Northern Lake County in 2005. And it's like, I'm just not going cable. We just don't watch that much TV. Usually we're watching TV and our eyes closed. But what I had done was went out and purchased a 100-mile digital antenna from Channel Master. And installed it up in the attic of my garage, yeah. Kind of centered it towards southeast, toward downtown Chicago. And I was losing channel 2. I'd pick up a few channels. So mostly the interference was coming on CBS channel 2. So I called down there, talked to an RF engineer, and he says, oh, I've got the solution for you perfectly. He says, I want you to go online to Channel Master and order a Channel Master digital preamplifier, model 7777, hook it up to your antenna, you put the preamp right next to the antenna, and then the amplifier is right by your TV set, and he says, you will be surprised. And I've been on that now since 2005, and it's beautiful. It is. It'll cost you for the 100-mile. Now, again, I want to mention that when you put it inside your attic, which we have to because our neighborhood doesn't allow antennas on the roof. Okay, so you're protected by having it in the attic, but you lose about 30% of the range. So now I'm down to 70 miles.
How many channels? How many channels are you able to see?
I'll list them here off my top of my head.
Well, but I mean, so you get the networks, right? You get the major networks,
yeah.
And then the local stations.
Yeah.
But if you get two CBS affiliates, you don't need that. It's pretty much the same programming. The local news would be different, but
2, 5, 7, 9, 11, 26, 32, 44, all of these, and they have subchannels. So, like 26, for instance, has dash 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I'm going off the top of my head. So, off the top of my head, you know, maybe I'm getting 30, 40 free stations.
You know, I've got to ask, do you miss CNN, ESPN?
I've never had it. Never had it, so you don't know what you're missing.
I would.
Again, by the time I get home from work and we're having dinner and watching TV, I'm looking at my eyelids. So, I really don't miss it. Plus, I'll mention to listeners that I have a home in Lake Geneva. I have that same 100-mile antenna with the same antenna preamp, and I get some of the basics. Depending upon weather conditions, I have better luck during the wintertime with less, fewer leaves
on the trees. Yeah, it's that way with AM radio, too. That's really helpful, Kevin. All right. Lots of calls here. There's your first one. But think about this. Kevin, thanks for the call. So he's never watched cable TV. But if you have, I've got to believe that you're going to miss it. You're going to miss whatever your channel is. AMC, Turner Classics, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk to Steve. You're next. You're on WGN. Steve, how are you doing that?
I'm doing good. What I do, for the last 10 years, I bought a digital antenna, and I've been watching at least up to 86 channels since they stopped doing the analog, and I get great reception. I live up in northern Illinois. I get Wisconsin. I get regular Chicago, and I also get Rockford. Granted, some of them are doubled.
Yep.
But it's kind of interesting to see the weather coming out of the west from Rockford.
And then click over.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't miss that much. I don't really watch a lot of TV.
Let me ask you this, though. Are you able to see Cubs games or Sox games?
When they're on WGN, yes.
Yeah, so they're on the broadcast television, then they do broadcast those games, and you can see them when they're on local TV then.
That is correct.
Not when they're on Comcast.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
The same thing with the Hawks and everything like that.
How about that? Hey, I appreciate the help on that, Steve. Thanks for the call. From you to John, you're on WGN.
What's going on, John?
Hey, man.
Hey, I've had no cable since I've been married, and I didn't have cable before then. We bought HD antennas, some Menards, $10 a pop.
Yeah.
I got three TVs in the house. I get about 46 channels, and it's like, well, my uncle told me years ago, you should never pay for TV. Your TV should be free.
Yeah, I know.
And we've never paid. And when we were at a party or something, they look at us like we're some kind of freaks. Like, you don't have cable? We're like, no, we've never had it, you know? It's just something we've never, and we don't miss it except for the Hawks. I will say the Hawks. I'd like to see all the Hawks games, but I'm not going to pay for TV.
Yeah, how about that? Thanks for the phone call. Boy, I'm not I'm not with you on this. I'm going to pay for cable TV. I have too much enjoyment from some of the shows I've been watching, but there's obviously a lot of you out there. Hey, Tom, you're on WGN. What do you know?
I live up in Racine, Wisconsin, and when cable TV kept raising their rates and taking channels away from me, especially when they took away Channel 9, WGN, I said enough is enough. And I went out and I bought an HD antenna. I put it up in my attic. I live on a two-story house. I didn't want to put it outside. So I tried it in the attic. I pointed it towards Chicago. And I did the scan, and I ended up with over 60 channels. Some of them are duplicate, so you have to remember that. But there's a good 25 channels to watch from.
How's the reception? How's your reception on your TV?
It depends on the weather, and it's kind of goofy.
Well, it used to be that way.
I have something, okay? Yeah. And I got, even though it's not pointing towards Milwaukee, I get everything from Milwaukee as well. So I've got plenty to choose from. I get all the major stations. I get public television both from Chicago and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And I'd never go back to cable. We're not, you know, there's always something I can find to watch. And the Sox or the Cubs are on either Channel 32 or Channel 9 or sometimes on Channel 5. And so I'm happy.
You know? Yeah, well, if you're happy, I'm happy. You know, it's funny, too, because here's my experience. I don't watch that much TV, but when I do, you know, you sit there, you click through, you're looking for something, you're going through the guide, just watching, you know, hundreds and hundreds of options. I found that sometimes I just watch guide. I never actually decide on anything. I wonder if it's that way for those of you with the antenna, too, or the options so much more limited that you're going to watch, I don't know, a Gidget rerun or, you know, I don't know what's on network TV. I don't watch that much network television, it doesn't seem. I'll tell you one show that we're watching at my house these days, and I think this is a Netflix original that just dropped, is Ozark. with Jason Bateman and Laura Linney. And it's set in Chicago, by the way. Or at least it started in Chicago. It has a lot of Chicago references. But actually, it's about a guy who was cleaning money for a Mexican drug cartel in Chicago. And then he and his family moved to the Ozarks to try and find a better way to launder the money. I'm leaving a lot out there. Wow, is it a good show. It's the kind of show where when an episode ends and, you know, you've got all the rest of them in the queue there and it's late and you're tired and you don't know if you've got an hour in you, but you go, oh, yeah, and you hit the start button or wait 30 seconds for it to reload because you're just like, that is amazing. And then the next one just leaves you like, well, now what's going to happen? So you, the next thing you know, it's 3 in the morning. It's called Ozark. Domati was checking on the beaches for us. The beaches are open,
okay.
Huh? Yeah.
I'm going to go tomorrow, so.
Yeah, you were just telling me off the air. So you are a Lake Michigan lap swimmer.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. It's the best. I didn't do it for a long time because I don't have a car and I don't know where to put my stuff. And then I realized, oh, they have lockers at Ohio Street Beach.
So yeah.
Problem solved.
And there's no locks on them. So usually some of the lockers are open. Bring your lock. You can put your clothes in there. If you're using swim gear, like a bodysuit or something, then, you know, you can kind of change on the spot and your stuff is safe. Guys, I always put my, like, watch, my phone, my wallet in my shoe, and then I very cleverly wrap it in a towel and put it on the beach like an innocent towel. There won't be any cell phone or money in here, folks. There's no way there would be one hidden under this towel. So that's my ruse, but I should probably lock it up in those lockers.
Now that you mention it to all these people, yeah.
And my glasses are there, too. So I'll be swimming around, just kind of playing in the water, which is what I like to do. And then I'll look back and see if in that blurred area where I left my little pile, anybody looks like they're lingering over my white towel.
Don't go in there. There's no phone in there. No,
there's no phone over there. So then I kind of hustle back over, and nobody was messing with my stuff. So I'm, you know, I don't enjoy the time in the water as much as I should. By the way, we were talking about those digital antennas and folks that are just watching free TV and what all is available out there. Hey, John, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. Real quick, 2011, I figured out that I was addicted to TV, and my brother made me a bet that I couldn't go 30 days. So I said, all right, here, just to make sure I don't go to it, take the TV. I gave him my big screen. And that was in 2011. I never went back. I never owned a TV ever since.
Wow. You've not watched... No, wait. You've watched TV, but you just don't own one. Is that right?
No, I don't watch any TV. I don't have a TV.
What if you were in a bar and the game was on, or you came over to my house and we were going to watch a show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Like, I would... If I'm at someone's house and they turn on the TV, I don't leave. But I don't. I found all of the hours that I was spending on TV, and now I use it. I go to work out. I take some courses online.
Yeah.
And I have no TV time in my schedule.
You know, and here's what I'm wondering is, so is your quality of life better than mine? Because I'm telling you, this Ozark TV show I'm watching is as good as any book I've read. Or is, I should probably be doing crunches while I'm watching it, but I mean, it's some of the stuff on TV is really good right now, you know?
Yeah, I could appreciate that. Yeah. I'm just saying, for me personally, it just gave me a whole different life.
Yeah, great call. Thanks for joining us, John. I appreciate you calling in.
Thanks.
Yeah, so he's not judging. I mean, that's what happens. We go, well, the people who don't have TV, they're not watching TV. They're living on some higher plane. No, they're not. No, they're not. There's bad books that are written. There are people that are terrible at yoga. And by the way, some of the TV out there is as good as it's ever been. So if you choose to watch TV, don't watch 9 hours of it. But if you're watching TV, that does not make you a lazy or inferior person. By the way, on our show on Monday, I'm on weekdays from 1 to 3. I think we will take up the annual conversation. We have this with every president every summer, and that is when presidents take vacations, people lose their minds.
I promise you, I will not be taking very long vacations if I take them at all. There's no time for vacation. We're not going to be big on vacation. You know, you think you'd want to work, straighten it out, get it done, fix it up, make it great, and then when you finish, you can be proud. But, boy, are we a mess. Because I'm going to be working for you. I'm not going to have time to go play golf. Believe me.
Honey, there's no reason to deny a president a vacation. The president has just started, I think today, his 17-day vacation. He's going to New Jersey. Wow. President Trump has had 53 leisure days so far. That does not include the 17 that he's about to tack on. So when he comes back in a couple weeks, he'll be at 70. President Obama averaged 27 per year, and Donald Trump will be at 70 at about the halfway point when he gets done with this one. And I don't even think that comparison is that useful, Amy, because I think presidents will never get away from their job.
No, never. You couldn't pay me enough to have that job. I think you have to be so attached to it. Just the mental energy to be president would be quite a bit.
I think someone's absolutely going to call in this, though, and they're going to say, but whenever he takes a vacation or a leisure day, he always goes to a Trump property. So the government then gives millions of dollars to the Trump properties because that's where he stays. We'll get into that conversation on our Monday.